Good morning to all our rich listeners out there, because the wake and rake curse has finally been lifted. Thank you. We did it. Justin, we did it.
What an exciting day.
Yesterday was electric.
It was pretty electric. I don't think I've ever cheered a Devil's goal so hard than the largely meaningless, other than for us, sharing Govich goal to make it 7. Kittle had already done his job. The Dutch, Gakpo.
Do you feel do you feel lighter this morning? I feel lighter.
Not really. I think it was wearing on you more than me.
You don't read
I'm
the
not
text
really
line,
sure why.
That's why.
That's probably why. You probably have more. You have more experience of like actually costing people money. Not that like.
Wow.
I've been an issue.
That's rude.
But you've done this for a little while, and you've probably had people a little upset with, you know, a little trapdoor action or the wake and rake not doing so well through certain stretches. So maybe you're a little bit more sensitive to it.
What are you gonna do with all your free money? I mean, earned money.
Probably reinvested in today's World Cup action.
I think I'm going to buy between 8 and 16 espressos in 24 hours at Cafe Diplomatico.
Those might be free. You never know.
You think Cafe Dip's going to supply us with the espressos?
I feel like Cafe Dip might be sending a coffee over.
Some of our listeners want to buy us coffee.
There you go.
Okay, guys, don't pump us with caffeine.
Let's see how much caffeine we can get in our bodies tomorrow.
Over under
4 hour show.
Okay.
I could drink a coffee an hour.
I certainly could drink a coffee an hour. Especially because like a cafe coffee is smaller than the thermos that I bring in every morning.
Yes. Yeah.
Like it's the size of like.
So you're drinking less, but you're probably getting maximum benefit. If it's just straight espresso, it's probably better than what you have in your thermos.
You don't. I have
all told
espresso shots in my thermos. In
but
the morning.
How did you create that? How did you?
With that machine.
How did you get it in
espresso?
Your thermostat? But I feel like the way the coffee is made is different. Yes, the
Nespresso. Well, I'm sure a cafe espresso is
good for
real.
Instant. Yeah. But if it's not instant, it's probably better.
Sometimes I think about getting that like silver espresso maker, you know, the big old clunker that sits on your counter, and you put they have the crushed espresso.
Mm-hmm. I have one of those.
You have one of those?
I don't use it as much though.
You're rich.
I'm not rich. The story is that my parents wanted a new one.
Oh, and they
were
going to
throw it out, so we took it. And then within the year, theirs broke.
Do people use
those? And now
they got
to buy a new one.
Hey, text in 5959. Like, should I invest in that? It's going to be Black Friday and Cyber Monday.
It's kind of like a weekend treat, to be honest. It's hard to be doing that at 4:30 in the morning. Yeah.
Is it loud?
It's not loud, no.
Oh.
It is expensive for what it is, though.
Well,
but it's nice.
I'm looking to treat myself during Black Friday Cyber Monday.
No, that's what's going on. Because you've been floating purchases my way ever since I sat down.
The problem with Black Friday and Cyber Monday is that it now extends for a month. It's not even exciting anymore. It's like Black Friday deals are now a week before.
And are they as good?
And they're at least 2 weeks after. It's like the extended Cyber Monday for 2 weeks and then it's Christmas.
Call me old-fashioned, but I'm going legit Black Friday. I'm not going in. I don't
getting?
Do that.
You don't have to go in the store
I
got to
buy myself a new TV, and I've been waiting for the excuse. More so, you know, let's just cool the jets on the spending, and let's get to, you know, a couple months
what
down the road.
TV
that was sort of my, I don't know, around the 50 range. Little basement TV.
I'm sure we can get some deals for you.
I'm sure there's something good.
I bet there's some
coupon. I don't know
what
we should be talking about or not talking about, but
there's some coupon crunchers out there that will send in some links on the text line, help you out.
But to your point, I feel like I've missed out on the best of Black Friday already because they started early and then all the inventory will go before actual Black Friday. Or will there be like, okay, we've had our Black Friday sale, now let's up the ante because we haven't moved any product yet.
I think that's when you wait.
This weekend.
Honestly, I think there's a strategy to this that I have not properly investigated. I've never really bought anything on Black Friday that was like significant enough.
Yeah, I never really make it a thing either. But it is a good excuse if you need something and you can wait a month or a couple weeks to
like
at least
see. This espresso machine.
It's such a like premium. I don't know. You've been talking about all these different things. So what do you want? The ring, the data ring, the espresso machine.
Okay. Quickly.
You're gonna go quickly, it's gonna be a big weekend for
quickly,
you.
Quickly, I'm interested in the Oura Ring. And I bet there's some listeners that have that. It's like a health, fitness, sleep, readiness.
Right.
Sorry that I care about my body and my health.
You deny being a big tech guy, but you're all about the data. How's that for data?
I would like you want some more data about data. My life. We sleep an average of 4 hours. I want to know if I'm dying quicker.
You have the most expensive data watch there is.
No, this is not that expensive.
Okay, it's not like, I guess, you know.
Apple Watch is like $300.
Okay, it's a premium product.
Okay, but you buy a nice watch. It's like, if you're a man, I'm sure it's that much money.
Yeah, it's different. But like, you have something that gives you information on your life. And you're unsatisfied with that.
The Oura
what makes
Ring's
you
different.
Think the ring is
who has
ring
an Oura Ring text in 59599? Like, is it worth it? Because I'm pondering. I didn't say I was going to get it. I brought it up this morning, and Justin was offended that I would buy one piece of technology.
I'm just amazed by your need for.
I want to know about my
data.
Health and wellness.
And you're interested in tech. You refuse to acknowledge that you're interested in tech.
I'm interested in some tech, like. I think about your body and your health is it probably a good investment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about the tech of like shots and what is it, expected goals. I don't really care too much about that.
Oh, the analytics.
Eye test guy.
Your eye test. Well, we're going to talk a little eye test versus analytics a little
That's
later.
That's right. I know. That was
Frank,
my segue for
Frank
you.
Frank got us a little interested in like what
Frank
Austin
stirred
Matthews
the pot.
Seasons
he came on the show yesterday.
Like.
He stirred the pot and then he bounced off.
He's you know what I like about Frank? It's not like one-way traffic with him. He wants to have a discussion.
I like that too because I'll say in our role, we often interview people. We ask question, see you never. But I like how Frank says, let me put it back on you. I'm like, oh my God, okay, I'm ready for it.
Frank wants to engage.
Frank's a great guy.
And, you know.
Speaking of some great guys.
We'll take what he said and try and spin it forward today.
You know who we have on the show today? Clemens.
Arguably the greatest guy.
I think he's in the upper echelon. If you had to go on a dinner date with three other Toronto-esque figures, Pinball Clemens has got to be up there.
He's definitely got to be your representative from the Argos.
Well, like, duh.
He is.
Except for the guy I met last night.
He is the Argo. Although there might be a new Argo. There might be a new pinball in the making because your buddy Henoch Mwamba is quite the good guy as well.
Guys,
so
I met Henoch yesterday.
He's like cut from that pinball cloth.
He's really sweet. The guy was fired up. So Henoch brought the gray cup to the Maple Leafs game last night. They did the grand entrance where they showed the video board and they gave like an amazing tribute to the Argos, about a minute long of the final plays in the championship. And then they said, welcome to tonight's game, your Toronto Argonauts. And then he came out with the Grey Cup. And word on the street, which is correct because I know the word.
Right.
He came directly from the airport, landed directly to the arena because that's the dedication this guy has to the fan base in Toronto.
He had the outfit going. He had it all going. I don't look like that when I'm off a flight.
I was surprised that he was
greasy, needing a shower.
Yeah, he was very put together.
He looked ready to go, yeah.
Anyway.
Was it just Henoch there? Who else was there?
It was just Henoch.
Okay.
So they said,
here are your Toronto Argos, and only one of them comes up.
He is the Toronto Argos.
I feel like
he's the MVP, most valuable Canadian.
That's true.
Face of that franchise now.
I also feel like he'd be the only guy who kind of kept it together during the celebration.
Did you not see him on the stage when he won the awards, Justin?
No,
he did the
kept it together in terms of partying.
No way. He just had the most emotional 10 minutes of his life. There's no way he went in there like, okay, I'm ready to party respectfully and politely.
I didn't say politely, respectfully, but I feel like the other guys would have
been just... Andrew Harris has been there, done
Andrew
that.
Andrew Harris would have been a wreck the next morning. Andrew Harris parties.
How do you know that?
I don't know if he not... I don't know anything about it. But
that's a statement.
I just feel like that could be Andrew Harris's last Grey Cup game. You don't think he's going to party and celebrate it?
I don't know. We're going to talk to Pinball Clemens at 7:30, and maybe he'll tell us. Probably not.
We got to ask him about the party.
We got to ask him about it. And we got Kipper at 7.
Yeah.
Bright and early.
Who's celebrated a championship before.
He knows. Anyway, let me know about the tech. People are texting in about Black Friday. Kind of in between. on the take. Some people have said, go for it. Some people said it's a joke now.
I feel like it is a bit of a joke now.
We'll talk about that another time. We're going to talk about your Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs might be the worst team in the history of sports in extra time.
Yeah.
Honestly, the second it goes to overtime, you're like, okay, L, people leave the arena early.
Do people actually leave the arena?
They just know. It's like, time to get on the subway.
So
quick.
Is there like an actual like dip in emotion because of...
Yes, they've lost 5 straight overtime games. And yesterday was a bummer letdown. They're winning the game. Chalgrin, I think it's Steve Dangle that says, if you're a goaltender, tender the net or protect the net.
Right.
Tend the goal. That was you did not need to go out of your net to touch the puck. It was totally fine.
No, it was really the only like major mistake too.
And they capitalize.
I will give the Leafs a lot of credit. I feel like they're in, we talked about like that comfort zone. I feel like part of the comfort zone is that they're just kind of dominating games now pretty quietly, like shift over shift. Everything's looking really good.
A great game.
But if there is one issue, it's they're failing to separate themselves from their opponent. Yeah, it happened against Buffalo, but you know, that's not something that happens every night where they're able to have a 2-3-4 goal cushion or at least a score line that reflects the actual run of play. So when it's still 2-1 forever, shift over shift, it's 2-1 and they can't get that third, they can't get an insurance marker, you open yourself up for that Chalgrin mistake. And I think we've been giving him a reasonable amount of credit. I'm very, very happy with him as your third. He's able to play NHL games and not break your back, but he made one mistake in a tight game and it burned them. And then they get to overtime where they can't perform like other teams for whatever reason. part of it is ill-equipped. Like, I'm just happy that John Tavares survived an overtime shift. It lasted like 25 seconds. He like on and off, like, let's get out of here before we make a mistake. But he was off the ice when it happened, and it was just a simple 2-on-2 rush that they broke down Justin Hall, and Bob's your uncle. That was it.
Bob's your uncle.
But the most important thing from that is that they didn't produce anything offensively themselves, and they almost got scored on the first shift, survived the Tavares shift, and then Beauvillier scored on the third shift.
The problem, I think, with 3-on-3 overtime is you have so much space, which is great because the Maple Leafs love to handle the puck, and they're very skilled. And they have a lot of finesse. But with all that open space, they're not, hungry to get to the net. I don't know if that's something you've seen.
How much 3-on-3 experience do you have?
I'd say quite a lot.
Did they play that in the collegiate level, 3-on-3?
Not in the States, but
when you were here.
When I was here playing.
So
I would certainly be on the ice for 3-on-3.
I don't want to bring my experience in because it's ridiculous, but I feel like the harder you go, the more disadvantaged you are.
I agree.
Because if you actually commit to anything, you leave yourself vulnerable.
But that's on the other side of the coin as well.
So that's what I think the relaxation thing is, like, okay, let's play it cool.
And let's
when
not
it looks
make
like you're
a
playing
mistake.
It cool, you don't like assert yourself. And there's like, you're trying to find the balance between effort level, if that makes any sense.
I agree. Because you're right. If you go all out, you know, you're jumping up in the play, making it a 3-on-2, capitalizing on a line change or capitalizing on someone out of position. If you don't score, the puck goes the other way real quick and there's a lot of space. But that's sometimes the risk you need to take. I don't think you can play perimeter hockey on 3-on-3 and just wait for an opportunity. I mean, it hasn't worked for them.
Yeah.
5 straight overtime losses in a row. And I don't think they've changed their strategy much.
Well, I think they did play it safe too and it still cost them.
Exactly. So I don't know if they don't practice 3-on-3. It kind of seems that way. That was the most fun part of practice. Okay, we're going to do 3-on-3 for 10 minutes at the end of the practice. I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's fun. And you, I think the whole point of 3-on-3 is you're capitalizing on someone else's mistake. But if you're chill and you're dipsy doodling and you're making backwards passes and you're staying on the perimeter, look what happened.
And they didn't even technically make a mistake. They just had the other team was more ambitious in the moment, I guess. They just actually tried to attack. And if Beauvillier missed the net there, I guess it could go the other way.
Puck goes around the other way, and there you go.
But he didn't miss the net, because they actually showed that they were trying to net the winner, whereas...
That was a nice goal. It was just like Zegras.
It was a nice goal. It shouldn't have happened, though. I mean, that's an easy 2-on-2 rush. And he created enough space to get the shot off.
nonetheless, it's a bit of a conundrum. Yeah, I don't know if we know the exact
thing. Something got to figure out because they're leaving points on the table. Five straight losses in OT. They've won one of six games. The only overtime winner they have is against Dallas and Nick Robertson, who's not playing, scored it. So
that was a Nick Robertson experience.
I do think it's a personnel issue, though. Like, think of the players that you feel comfortable with out there for the Maple Leafs in a three-on-three scenario. You've got Marner for sure, Matthews for sure, Nylander for sure, although maybe, you know, we saw a mistake. And I don't want to, like, paint the picture on him just based on that alone. But I don't know. Maybe he's not as diligent with the puck in those scenarios. Tavares, you don't trust. Riley has had major issues. And then who else? There's, like, three players that you trust.
That's about accurate.
Yeah. So it's supposed to be an offensive team, and yet...
That's why you got to score in the first shift. If there's three players you trust, put those three out, boom, score on the first shift.
John Tavares literally wouldn't be in the league if it was 3-on-3. If the NHL was a 3-on-3 league, he wouldn't be in it.
I don't think that's a bold take.
It's not. It's just, I'm just saying, like, he's dominant at 5-on-5. He's a liability at 3.
A liability.
Anyway, Saudi Arabia just took the 2-1 lead over Argentina.
What?
Yeah, pretty crazy.
5 seconds ago, I looked, it was 1-0 Argentina. Mm-hmm. What's going on there? Guys, this is so distracting. So there's one TV in this little booth that we're in, and Justin's the only one facing it. I'm facing a wall, and Justin, terrible view.
As the listeners, though, know, though, if you're, you know, following us on Instagram or Twitter, you have the premier shot.
I don't care. I want to watch World Cup as well.
At least I get a television.
Like, when we're on the air, I want to glance up at the World Cup TV and see that Saudi Arabia just scored 2 goals in 3 minutes.
That's insane. I don't know how that happened. Nice goal, too.
All right, so Leafs losing in overtime, leaving, I think, a point that they should have had, they should have earned, and I think they did earn in a three-minute span, basically. The end of the game, deflate, go into overtime, loss. It's tough. And other than that, I thought it was actually, like, a pretty great game. A good game.
I think it's what you sort of expect from them right now, where they're playing really, really well. They found a formula that works for them. The top four interchangeable is a great thing. It's really, really good. I love it. I love that they can mix the four around and everything works. Fantastic. The fourth line's working. The third line is working as good as it has all year, even though it's like kind of like, you know, it still feels like a break-even thing. You could get a little bit more out of them, but maybe there is more for them, more runway for them to improve. I am a little bit more open now after that game and after the last couple games of them looking for a forward on the trade market, because it's clear that they are having trouble scoring outside the top four. We know that. And if you can't separate yourselves from these games and you can play well defensively, which you have, and if you rely on your forwards to lead some of that defensive and shoulder that defensive responsibility, then I kind of think you need another player in the lineup that can score a goal.
Unless Morgan Riley and his injury is serious.
But this could be why it's a good thing a little bit. Morgan Riley is going to have to get reevaluated. He's going to get some pictures, quote unquote, done, which is an MRI, which is not ever a good thing. So there's a realistic possibility that you're losing your first, second, and third best defenders for a decently prolonged stretch here, with Brody and Muzzin already out, and now Riley probably looking at a little bit of an absence here.
Well, you would think so.
But he did come back for a shift, and then he left. And generally, if you come back for one shift, it's not, like, catastrophic, I guess we should say.
Well, I don't think he tore his kneecap off, no.
Well, no, but I guess...
What was that answer?
No, it's not the kneecap, but, like, you can... Zach Hyman played on a torn ACL. You might not know it right away.
And there's momentum, like, you know, there's adrenaline.
Yeah, so you might not necessarily know, but I feel like if he misses a couple weeks, more responsibility, Sandin, more for everyone. Let's see what everyone can do. And then if you're just reinviting more people back in the lineup, if it's Brody and then Riley, probably not Muzzin, but someone replacing Muzzin, even if it's cheaper, then you just find it's good experience for the lesser lights of the blue line, and then you can maybe grow and find more, and people feel a little bit more comfortable. I still think they need another blue liner because depth is just so important.
They don't have any other blue liners.
Just replacing Jake Muzzin is important, I think, but I feel like getting another scorer is important as well.
Well, we'll have to find out And hopefully within today or tomorrow, we get a little more information on Morgan Riley. Sheldon Keefe spoke post-game a little bit about the situation, which obviously was a freak accident. Like, it's different than maybe the Matthews situation where it looked like he was targeted mid-ice. But here's Sheldon Keefe on Morgan Riley post-game.
Like you say, when we're already missing guys, and Morgan is so important to our team and to our back end in particular, you know, but... You know, we lose Muzzin, made a big deal of it, wasn't a big deal. Brody made a big deal of it, wasn't a big deal. Just got to keep playing. That's the way it goes.
We did make a big deal of it. Those are some significant pieces. I know what he meant by that, but I was like, oh, okay, we did make a big deal of it, and I still think it is a big deal. But I think his conversation point there is that we've been fine without them.
I think it's a great point, because I think they did, I don't know if they made a big deal of it. But, like, it seemed like everything, whichever way the wind was blowing, was a big deal early on in the season.
Oh, yeah.
And then they've kind of just like, oh, we're missing Muzzin. Okay, we'll be fine. We lose Brody. That should be a disaster. Oh, we're going to be fine. We
got a small sample size, though. I'm not
small sample size. You're not winning a postseason series without, you know,
three of those players.
Without those three guys or two of them. It's not going to happen. But right now, it's not a big deal. And now I think this is a bigger deal. But if you treat it like it's not a big deal, don't let it become a big deal, maybe you can continue on with where you're at, which is, again, the forwards on your team more often than not dominating, the defense playing really, really well. I don't know if it's going to hold up against the Devils, who are going to have 14 straight wins, I think, in the Maple Leafs' next game tomorrow night. Like, that's still a big, big challenge. And that, you know, it means something in the short term. But if it's not a long-term injury, you can get by without Morgan Riley for a couple nights.
You mentioned the Devils, who just won their 13th consecutive game. Mm. Their next game, of course, is against the Toronto Maple Leafs tomorrow night on home ice. The opportunity to break their franchise history of 14 consecutive wins just happens to line up against your Maple Leafs. What are the odds, eh? After they lost to the Devils 4 days ago.
And for that reason, it's an important game. Like, let's say... I know, you're disadvantaged for sure if you don't have Riley or Brody, 100%.
But the Devils have to lose sometime. What's going on there?
Exactly. if you beat the Devils, if you snap a 13-game win streak,
the best
you're
going to
feel really, no, you're going to feel really good about it. Maybe you are
take the crown.
For the night, you're the best team in the NHL. You can feel really good about it, but if you lose twice to the Devils on this run, you're like, okay, tough. We're not as good as this team. And that might just linger for a little while. But no one right now is good at the Devils.
No.
Let's just put it out there.
Somebody did say that like they thought the Devils weren't going to make the playoffs.
Was that me?
No.
Might have been me. I don't think I was picking them. Who was that? You?
No.
Well, Sports, call him out now.
Our guy Keith Yandel on the panel yesterday.
Oh, he said it like...
He got lit up on Twitter.
I thought you said that
our
was...
Guy.
I thought you were suggesting there was like a cold take out there.
No, no. He said it yesterday on the panel.
Yeah, I don't...
And I swear that Twitter ignited into flames.
I didn't see Twitter, but I did hear him say that and I was like,
you know what? Keith Yandel, like, friend of the show,
gotta be like,
employee of ours.
I wouldn't say
good
they have
him.
To be historically bad to miss the playoffs, but they got to be bad to
and
miss
then
the playoffs.
I saw a graph that said they have a 99% chance of making the playoffs. Anyway, we all have bad takes or hot takes, and we'll see. Maybe he's right.
Never know.
I want to talk about Sandin fighting. A little scrappy Sandin. I mean, okay, first of all, the mid-ice Matthews situation.
Yeah.
It could have been terrible.
Not great. Not exactly Alex Edler, but not great.
And I think Sandin just... Oh God, I'm the closest to this guy. I gotta fight him.
He's like yeah.
Good for it. Honestly, I have nothing but good for you, Sandin, for doing that. But at the time, it was like, oh, Sandin is now in the closest proximity to fight. I think he thought, oh, this is my chance to. I have to fight, and he did.
You could literally see him make a decision, like, in the moment.
It's like, should I?
Yeah, I got to do it.
I got to do it. But good on him, honestly.
What's Keith going to say if I don't do it? I got to do it.
What's everybody going to say?
But I like how he, like, kind of lightly put his hands on Wallstrom, and then Wallstrom
like,
flung off
we're
the gloves.
We're going to fight? Okay, like, we're going to fight.
So he took one. Yeah, pretty good shiner, but gets a tap from Gio, gets a tap from Matthews. I'm sure.
The crowd was electric.
Teammates remember that sort of thing, right?
Of course. And it's Austin Matthews. It's different if someone went out for Pierre Engvall, who's a massive body.
You might expect Pierre Engvall to stand up for himself. You might not, though. but when it's Matthews, again, I don't even know how meaningful it is, but any experience I have with the team, it's like, if you stand up for each other, it helps build camaraderie.
With
it
your
helps
beer league team?
In any team. You always diminish. You always diminish. But even in a beer league scenario, if you stick up for each other, the beer's going to taste better after, right?
I agree.
So even
Justin,
if it's as simple as that, or as important as an NHL game, that stuff does matter, and it lingers, and it's not forgotten.
Matthews did talk post-game about Sandin standing up for him, and he was very pleased.
Yeah, I was just trying to get out of the way and just kind of got tripped up. So, you know, I meant a lot, Sandy jumping in there and doing that. You know, I think as, you know, we're still 20 games in the season, but, you know, I think this is extremely tight. And when we've run into situations like that, we've always had each other's back. So, you know, I think that's what makes our team so close. So, you know, on my end, obviously, it's much appreciated. I don't know how much I want to see Sandy dropping his gloves like that, but obviously it means a lot coming from a guy like that.
There you go. There's your vibes.
Mm-hmm.
The team is closer than ever now. So you did some...
You're saying it like you're patronizing me. Do you not believe that?
I agree, Justin.
Do you, though?
I do agree, but I don't know how much moves the needle. But it's nice.
I don't
nice.
Think it moves the needle at all, but okay. Like it's... Okay, let's put it this way. It's better than the alternative. If nothing 100%. Happens, we're talking about it, they hear about it, they feel worse. If it happens,
agree.
You know... Rasmus Sandin's head is throbbing today, but everybody else feels better.
I'll say, seeing Rasmus Sandin stick up for Austin Matthews actually meant more to me than seeing Michael Bunting do it.
Yeah, because Bunting just like...
Out of character, guy.
Bunting would have found a way to not fight Wahlström.
No,
even
he
if Wahlström
he would have body slammed him.
Thing. He would have just like grabbed him or somehow. I don't know. I don't even know how it happens.
I have
but
a
like,
lot of praise for Rasmus Sandin. Don't take that wrong.
Okay.
Okay, so Justin did some analysis last night.
Oh, but that's again patronizing. You're in a patronizing.
No, I'm just saying. Like you went hard on some research, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about it.
Okay, so this is based on.
Not everything I say is an attack, Justin.
Sometimes. This is based on Frank's, you know, worries about Austin Matthews and his form, and on pace for 34 goals. He did score last night, but. He has been, and it was a rare 5-on-5 goal. I think two in the last 17 games now. Mm-hmm. Only three on the season, two of which were tips. One of them came really early. Like, it hasn't been the avalanche of goal scoring which we got last year. However, the question was, is he less dangerous or less routinely positioned to score goals? And, like, when we talk about the eye test, like, I think we both agree that that's true,
mm-hmm.
right? It seems obvious. We agree with Frank. It seems like Matthews isn't putting him in those same spots, that he is less of a quote-unquote threat. But there's actually no statistical evidence to point to that. But that doesn't mean, like, our eyes are deceiving us. It's not... We shouldn't take those numbers and view them as, oh, we're wrong, we're morons. He's actually even better than he was last year. But some of the numbers would indicate that he is better. If you look at, like... individual scoring chances rate or expected goals from an individual level, like his numbers have mildly improved pretty much across the board. There is like a little step back in even strength scoring chance and expected
goals. Is this the same amount of time as last year
per minute,
season.
Per 60 minutes, whatever. So it's like not per shift, but per unit of measurement, time measurement. So he is a little bit, overall, he's been more dangerous. At 5-on-5, he's been slightly less dangerous. But on the power play, he's getting a little bit more. And that doesn't seem to bear out when you think about it, though. Like, does he look better on the power play?
No, just fine.
Does he look as good or just slightly less at even strength in 5-on-5? No. But that's what the numbers say. And really, the most glaring statistic, and this was last night, he did score, so the shooting percentage will jump up, is that he scored 17.2%. of the time on his shots last year, and this year it's under 10%, or at 10% now after scoring yesterday. So, like, I think it's lazy analysis to be like, oh, shooting percentage will be better. He'll be all right. He'll score his goals. And he will. Like, that's true to a certain extent, but I feel like you should trust your eyes and know that he is getting his chances, but it does look different. So what is that? I think that's an execution thing. Maybe he's just not feeling his shot like he did last year. Mm. Maybe he's missing the net sometimes. Maybe he's not, the shot isn't coming off like it did. Maybe he's not fooling goaltenders as much as he did. I feel like that's really the difference, is just the execution level. And for that reason, it's coloring our impact on him. But I also think that we're not wrong. Everything. It's less. There are fewer chances. But the chances he is getting, which are still a lot, are being squandered more than they were last year.
I feel like, okay, we're talking eye tests because that's easier for many people to comprehend.
Right.
I feel like I've seen less of those shifts where Auston Matthews gets the puck and does it all himself. And then I see Connor McDavid do this often and with a high level of success. And that's kind of your bar, right? These two are head-to-head, some of the best players in the league. You see Connor McDavid do this nightly where it's, okay, I'm going to go end-to-end and I'm going to make this incredible dynamite play and I'm going to use my body and my skill and my speed to score a goal. And I feel like I've just seen less of that from Auston Matthews. I don't know how that is valued in your expected goals and your percentages, but visually, can you not agree that that's something you see?
100%. I do think there's a difference between those two players, though.
Because
Matthews is more...
They're not the same player.
I would say Matthews is more of an off-the-puck player, especially when playing with Mitch Marner.
An off-the-puck threat.
And Connor McDavid is not only at the point of attack, he is getting the puck there. He's transporting the puck from one spot to the next. That's not necessarily Matthews' job. That's more Mitch Marner's job. So I feel like visually, it looks like Connor McDavid is dominating more, and he is. Let's just be honest. He's at a higher level right now. He's the better player, playing at a higher level, more dominant, night after night after night, and 100% having the better season. But I feel like if you just compare like what it looks like, until Matthews puts the puck in the net, Connor's always going to look more visually appealing. I just think the difference is in terms of, I think there's less of an intentional thing, too, with the Maple Leafs. Like, last year, it was like, let's get the puck to him as much as we can because he's scoring all these goals. Let's just ride the hot hand. And that turned into this thing that turned into another thing that turned into 60 goals. This year, it's not snowballing. He's still playing really, really well. It's just his touch might not be exactly the same. He might not have the exact same hot hand. And I think that's proof, if anything, that last year was a bit of an outlier where that might be the ceiling.
So, well, maybe our expectations are he scores 50.
Well, like everything goes so perfectly, you score 60. If everything is just normal, you score 50. And I feel like he's having a normal season.
I also feel like he, this could be a freezing cold takes because he has the opportunity and the ability to go on a heater. Like, he could go and score.
Oh, there's going to be a big time heater.
12 in 2 weeks. And we look back, we should have given him more credit. But I hope that's the case. Mm-hmm. Just right now in our sample size, this is where we're at. But I have no doubt in my mind that Auston Matthews can prove us wrong.
And the proof's in the pudding on that, though. Like, he has.
And he's done that.
He has shot one puck into the net 5-on-5, I believe, based on what I was looking at last night. I could be corrected on that. But two tips at 5-on-5. Yeah. So it's not like last year where it was just every time it came off his stick, it was beating a goaltender. It is still coming off his stick, though. I think that's the point. And when it is still doing that, you expect him to have some positive regression, get on a run where he's scoring a lot of goals. And guess what? He's still like in the Rocket Richard race despite these struggles.
My level of concern when you lay it out like that definitely went down a little bit because it's easy to just have the hot take of, well, he's not putting the puck in 5-on-5. But as you laid it out?
Again, though, like, just don't let the numbers fool you either, because it is different. What's different, I feel like, is how the puck, not how, like, it's not like, oh, he's got suddenly a bad shot. It's just getting to the point where he's in a scoring chance, maybe the quality of scoring chance, whatever it is, it's not as, there's a little bit more resistance for whatever reason, whether it be his execution level, defenders being a little bit tighter to him, whatever it is, it's the goals are harder to come by.
We'll talk to Kipper about this at 7. See what he thinks. He was there live in person. Okay, I just want to touch on one thing before we take a break. Our guy, John Morosi, the bringer of Blue Jays content, had a really great MLB Network interview yesterday, which basically put, again, in the stratosphere a little bit more confidently that the Jays are really knocking on the door of Cody Bellinger.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon Nimmo, but a little bit more conversation on Cody Bellinger being the guy right now. I wanted to play this clip. It's a little long, but it's laying it out pretty concretely that the Blue Jays are going to be in on one of these guys.
Let's start with Cody Bellinger, a former National League MVP for whom the last couple of years have not come easy. Where is the best potential fit for a guy who still is among the better defensive players, certainly in the sport?
He is, Matt. I'll say this. I will be somewhat surprised if the Toronto Blue Jays do not sign either Bellinger or Brandon Nimmo. There is such a strong need for this team to get an athletic, left-handed hitting center fielder that you've got now these two players on the market. Obviously, Bellinger has his flaws. Very little has gone right for him, to your point, since he injured his shoulder while celebrating that memorable home run in Texas back in the 2020 National League playoffs. And so with Bellinger, it's a matter of getting that shoulder sound again. You see what's happened there. Obviously, even the 2020 season was not great for him because of the shoulder issue. But again, Scott Boras has said to Ken Rosenthal, there's a belief that by strengthening the shoulder, changing the training regimen that he's got around that shoulder joint, that he's going to be able to be a little bit closer to that 2019 version of his production. And the virtue of him being so young, and Scott Boras told Ken this, is that having the one-year deal is appealing. Go out there, prove that you can still do it, post some great numbers, you're still in your 20s for 1 year, then go back out of the free agent market a year from now. And I would say this, there are few venues, both because of the quality of the lineup and the hitter-friendly nature of the ballpark, that are more conducive to that approach than the Toronto Blue Jays and Rogers Center. So I do expect the Jays to still be very aggressive on Brandon Nimmo, but if they can't get Nimmo, it's a nice quick pivot to a shorter-term possibility in Cody Bellinger.
Okay, lots to unpack there. I think the major point of contention for many is that Cody Bellinger has had possibly the worst fall from grace over the last three seasons that we've seen from someone who was an MVP caliber, MVP award winner,
yeah,
who was all-star, an incredible talent when he first came into MLB. He's obviously had injury issues and he hasn't produced at the plate. And now he's going to look for a 1 year bet on yourself contract. Morosi puts it in a good light that he's young and he could do some, you know, strengthening of his shoulder, et cetera. And that might make a difference. Rogers is hitter friendly. I also looked at the numbers and he has probably been one of the players that has been affected the most by the shift, and the shift is being banned next season.
Okay.
So that's a really important fact.
Little data there.
Big data guy. So all of those things are promising. And then you look at him, okay, so like a 1 year contract, bet on yourself, a way less of an investment than Brandon Nimmo, who's looking for 5-6 years, $120 million, $150 million, who is going to be an issue when you try to sign a Vlad or a Bo or a Manoa when that money needs to be available. So it's kind of like what you want, maybe as a fan, and it's a curious conversation. Do you want a 1 year bet on yourself? Cody Bellinger either has this incredible return or at least takes some steps forward, or you want to lock in Brandon Nimmo for quite a few years and make that commitment to a guy that is also great. He's better than Cody Bellinger.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's kind of, they're two different pathways, and I wonder where you stand on that and where our listeners stand on that and what was more appealing to you.
Well, it's a pretty simple concept, right? Buy low, sell high, stock market. If you looked at these two as assets, you have one that's got basically a shot value in Cody Bellinger. Mm-hmm. He's a Boras client looking for a one-year deal. Like, that doesn't happen, right? A one-year prove-it deal for a Scott Boras client. I could be probably interested in that. Whereas Nimmo is, you know, he's established his value. He hit his peak at 30. he is someone who's going to be hard-pressed to replicate what he's done. I feel like I'd prefer Nimmo if the situation was the same, but it's not. And you got to pay him a lot of money. He's going to be the premier center fielder or premier outfielder, probably premier center fielder, on the move this offseason. And I don't want to tie up money knowing that I have big investments on the way. I think if you can stage the bounce back season for Cody Bellinger, you put yourself in a decent position. I think the alternative with Kevin Kiermaier, a more defensively responsible center fielder, maybe reallocate the assets might be the best thing. But if it's a choice between Nimmo and Bellinger, I feel like it's Cody Bellinger.
That's exactly where I fall into line.
No, Brandon Nimmo could show up here. He could be great, and we'd be really happy.
Well, but he's going
like
to be great.
Feels like you're doing the George Springer thing again.
Yes.
And the George Springer thing, despite how great it is to have this player here, has tied up dollars. And tied up dollars that you might need at the end of that contract.
And he's now getting injury issues, and he's going to move off center field and become a right fielder.
It should
fielder,
be a cautionary
and
tale.
And he's going to maybe DH more. And that's he's had injury issues,
and Nimmo
that's fine.
Not Springer. Nimmo is not Springer. Not even close. So if you're doing that same thing for a lesser player, where do you leave the team in a couple years?
Completely agree. 590-590. Send in your thoughts. We just had a good one from David in Pickering that says, Bellinger will sign here 100% as weed is legal here.
That's a good point.
There's the Marcus Semien parallels. He came in, bet on himself, boom.
Yeah, it kind of sucks when it works out.
When
because
you use
you lose
this as
the
a platform, you're like, oh, great, now I'm going to go make bank. Thanks.
But you would sign up for that same situation with Bellinger, not even to the same extent. Like, Semien was a different world. Like, that's a once-in-a-lifetime, one-year, or short-term deal. Short-term partnership, I'll say. But if you can get some of that, if it can be on that same path, then you put yourself in a really good spot.
Risk and reward. I wonder how the Blue Jays view that, especially with the idea that you need to sign some big-name guys in
your own
rapid
fashion.
All right, let's take a break. We're going to do the A-list after lots in there. Maybe a Manoa fueling the fire against the New York
Yankees. Speaking of the guys you got to pay.
That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Justin and A-list, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Serge Ibaka continues to keep the city of Toronto in his heart. And he's bringing...
Is it in his heart or is he thinking about the wallet? Thinking about the heart or
possibly
wallet?
Possibly both. And that's fine.
That's fine, yeah.
Episode 2 of How Hungry Are You featured none other than Alec Manoa. It's up on YouTube. Sportsnet product. Hey, hey, hey. There's two really good pieces of content from this. I mean, there's probably more, but the two spicy ones, no pun intended, start with Alec Manoa calling out Gerrit Cole, who is probably my least favorite athlete in sports. And they have a history of hating each other.
If not for anything else, it's just the look on Gerrit Cole's face at all times.
He's so
pouty. That's hateable.
Yeah. Annoying. Anyway, so Alec Manoa is asked by Serge Ibaka, who's the biggest cheater in baseball? Here's his response.
Who is the worst cheater in baseball history?
In baseball history?
Yeah.
Cheater?
Yeah.
Gerrit Cole.
Gerrit Cole, what he did?
Yeah, he cheated. He used a lot of like sticky stuff.
Yeah.
To make his pitches better.
Wow.
And he kind of got called out on it.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't wait for Blue Jays Yankees again next season. We saw the why don't you come past the Audi sign? That was last year when Gerrit Cole was barking at him from the dugout and refused to actually make anything happen. But I love this rivalry. I love Alec Manoa standing his ground, fueling the fire. Mm-hmm. Good on you.
I think the most like endearing thing about Alec Manoa is that he's unafraid.
Yeah, yeah.
And even just like chatting with Serge Ibaka, he shows that he's unafraid. Was there like a smoking gun with Gerrit Cole? Like, did he actually get caught? Because things change, right, in the, you know, rules and getting checked and
if
all that stuff.
If he didn't get caught, that's a big accusation. I think he did. I don't know.
He must. I mean, there must be some, like, pretty I don't know. Actually, I think he could actually be joking about it and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. Like, he could just, like, accuse him of this without any...
I don't think there's any joke
any
in
information, and Manoah would do it, though, just for the laugh. Because he doesn't care.
That's pretty good, eh?
I love it.
This rivalry can only get better. I wonder if Garrett Cole, I think he's the type of guy that sees that and, like, might say something.
It will be a thing next year, 100%.
Yeah. It's going to be great. We got to wait, like, 300 days, though, which sucks.
It's okay.
Second part of the How Hungry Are You episode that I wanted to bring up was Manoah talking about his time at the All-Star game, and somebody that he met and really idolizes also idolized him and is a free agent.
Who was the player you was looking the most to see you, to meet them?
The biggest one for me was Justin Verlander. He's been playing for, you know, 15, 16 years. He's one of the best pitchers ever, you know. So for me, we were actually in the hotel and I saw him come walking by and he kind of was walking like towards me. It was like the first time I ever got like kind of like starstruck. I was like, oh, shoot. And I said, what's up to him? Like, introduced myself. He's like, man, I know who you are. He's like, you're amazing. I'm a big fan of you. I was like, wow, you're a big fan of me. I'm not me. Your cool. Biggest fan. Yeah. And I was able to talk with him a little bit and kind of try and pick his brain on how he's been so good for so long. And yeah, it was really cool.
Potential partnership on the mound next year?
Feel like it's going to be a little out of the price range, no?
Ooh.
If it was going to happen, it would have happened last winter because the Jays were in.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jays hadn't spent the money yet. They hadn't spent on Yusei Kikuchi yet. My timeline a little bit shot because of the lockout stuff or whatever. But it felt like it was going to happen. It would have had to happen last year. Now we're here in Dodgers, which just makes the most sense. I mean, that would be it. I worry about, you know, we just talked about Bellinger versus Nemo.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of, like, he just won the unanimous Cy Young. But after watching him in the playoffs, it was like, is that it? Has he reached the end of the line? Either way, I'm down.
I think
I want Justin Verlander. I'm not going to lie.
Lit.
You think
if
so?
Verlander came to Toronto. I just thought it was really nice because Manoah is young, and I think him at the All-Star game really helped get his league-wide recognition because we're up here and not everyone's watching Toronto Blue Jays games. They watch him when he comes on the road and they think, wow, this guy's amazing. But his All-Star appearance when he was mic'd up and he had this great inning, and I think people really started to love Alec Manoah, and it was really nice that Justin Verlander, the vet, someone that Manoah has looked up to, had some good comments about him. So anyway, something to chew on.
We can dream. Manoah can dream. Maybe it's possible.
All right, let's get into some
The soccer report brought to you by Certainty, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. Certainty'd pro all the way. Some pretty important things going on in the World Cup as we speak, but the results that we know yesterday, England, it's coming home. Smashed Iran 6-2.
Yep, that's all you needed.
Netherlands helped out the Wake and Rake with a 2-goal victory over Senegal, and the United States and Wales drew 1-1. USA was great in the first half. Wales was great in the second half, and it resulted in split points. But right now, we could be seeing the upset of the tournament.
Oh.
It was just cleared off the line for Saudi
Arabia.
8 minutes
of extra time right now.
Play-by-play right now.
Yeah, come on.
8 minutes of extra time. There's something going on with the World Cup where it's just like we're getting 10 minutes per half.
There was a 14-minute...
24 minutes of extra time in England-Iran yesterday.
Like, that's like
or
two
England,
games.
Iran, yes.
Yeah.
24 minutes is nearly a half hour is ridiculous. Anyway, it seems like they're being a little bit more liberal for whatever reason. Something to think about when we're talking about overs, a little bit more game
that's
time.
That's a good point, Justin.
But anyway, right now, Saudi Arabia is leading Argentina, which would be not the favorites, maybe not co-favorites, but right up there in terms of teams that can win the World Cup. Mm-hmm. This would be a major blow, and it would give an opportunity for either Poland or Mexico to take top spot in the group. Who played today. Or at least get into the best position in Group C. So we'll monitor that. The game will end on the other side of the break, so we'll update you. But later on today, Denmark and Tunisia, Mexico and Poland, as I mentioned, will play for a really important game. And then France and Australia is the nightcap at 2 p.m. in Qatar. So things are already heating up here, and we'll have the first wrench thrown into the proceedings if Saudi Arabia can hold on and beat Argentina and Lionel Messi today. That
scored?
Would be something else.
Of course. He
did open the scoring, but Saudi Arabia has answered with two. That soccer report will be coming from Cafe Dip tomorrow.
Woo!
But for now, it's brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed Pro all the way.
Canada plays tomorrow. We are on the verge of opening our World Cup.
It doesn't feel like tomorrow.
What? I've been waiting. We've been all waiting like months for this.
Does it feel like it's snap of the fingers? It's coming now.
I have been on the hunt for some Canada soccer merch.
Yeah.
To wear tomorrow at Cafe Dip. There I think was, I've located something.
You didn't like, there was like a suggestion yesterday that I should be wearing Canada stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, I don't have it.
I don't
yet.
Know if I'm going to join you on the hunt for Canada gear, but
I'm going to represent tomorrow.
You will find something today.
I've circled some locations where I will be venturing to today.
Like vintage, or are you paying full price somewhere?
I think I'm paying full price.
For the actual gear?
So I don't know if I want a jersey. I don't know. They're expensive. But I could get like a sweater or like, I have a scarf. I'm not going to wear a scarf all day at Cafe
Dip.
I'll be sweating.
You're going to have at least two items of clothing tomorrow representing Canada in Canada soccer.
I would love a hat. A Canada soccer hat. I could definitely wear that. And a sweater. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow's going to be electric. We're going to meet some of our friends in the text line. So they say.
Come down. We'll share some espresso. Four-hour show.
Oh, yeah. We have a four-hour show tomorrow. Are you ready for that? You've never done that.
I think I'm ready. The problem is, it's like we're going to be inundated with like soccer. It's going to be, there's going to be live games on all the time. I've been distracted by this game. We're now in the fifth minute of extra time, and Argentina still trails. So it's going to be a little bit distracting tomorrow because there'll be people buzzing around, games on. Mm-hmm. But I think we'll be all right.
It's going to be fun. Can't wait. That'll be Cafe Dip.
Diplomatico for anyone who doesn't.
Okay. I think there's another cafe called Cafe Dip.
I don't know.
They sell Skol.
Cafe Dip is a legendary establishment in Toronto, though.
It's the spot. Everybody knows it.
So stop by and we'll, are we watching the Canada game there? It's going to be a long shift.
So, yeah, the Canada game's at 2. I think we can do it. Depends on how many espressos we get through. But then there's a crash. Maybe you go take a pregame nap in your car in between.
Yeah, that might have to happen.
All right, let's take a break. Let's talk to Kipper, who was in the seats with Bourne and Sammy at the game yesterday, living it up in the Platinum.
Just a little show outing, eh?
Yeah, must be nice to go as a show to an event together and spend some time.
Did you get any feedback on your performance from the boys?
No, we didn't speak. Okay. Let's talk about it after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish, 5:90 The Fan.